You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Desperate. I'm Julia.
And I'm Jordan.
And this is a podcast for us, two lovely unwed women, take a walk down ABC's critically acclaimed... Sorry, I always fuck this up. This is a podcast for us, two unmarried women, take a walk down Wisteria Lane of ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. It's been a while since it's been on the air, but we're here for all the super fans, all the new fans, anybody who just wants something to fall asleep to. We have lovely voices, we think. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching it for the first time. I don't think I've said that in a while. This is my first rodeo with Desperate Housewives. And yeah. Jordan is a longtime listener, a longtime fan.
Yeah, I have watched this show through a couple times. And I actually watched it like the whole time it was on the air. So
she was a live veteran fan. Yeah, she was there in real time.
I did see them. Well, I did watch them film it one time when I did the studio tour at Universal. So, yeah. Like, I've been involved, guys.
Yeah, I took the studio tour at Universal Studios as well. And they say that way is Wisteria Lane, where we filmed it. But it was this year, so obviously it took the wind out of their sails.
Well, with all these reboots going on, hopefully.
I'm sure there will be one. There's been a lot of cringy reboots happening. But basically, we talk about an episode of Desperate Housewives. We go in order. We've been watching from season one. We're today watching season two, episode 14, Silly People. We talk about what's been going on so far. We talk about our own desperate deeds to get you warmed up for anything that these ladies might do. Mm-hmm. And then we recap the episode. And afterwards, we evaluate it on several different scales, including a classic fuck, marry, kill, a housewife of the week, which we have a vague criteria that we follow to decide that. But they make it pretty easy for us lately. It's usually just one clear person.
Yeah, usually one person is the only one who acts appropriately in the episode.
Yeah, so they've been making it really easy. And then we give it a rating on a scale of 1 to 5 apples. I've been going really high because I don't know what's to come, but Jordan's been, like, evening out the scores. I've been like, this episode is definitely a 4.5, and it was, like, really average.
I think it's just hard for me sometimes because I forget, like, 4.5 is actually, like, a really high score. Like, cause,
it's super
like,
high.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, I guess that's kind of high. Like, that's, like, a 90%, so maybe I should.
In the A range.
Yeah, so I'm like, I think I'm trying to get better at, like, remembering that scale, I guess.
I need to do that too. So maybe today I'll rein it in. But last episode was all something about war, I think it was called. It was all about war and like little battles that people have. My favorite storyline was Edie. It was about 2.5 minutes long at the beginning. Mm-hmm. It showed us how shitty Carl actually is.
Yeah.
And that was a minor thing, but we didn't see Edie. The ladies all just engaged in their own battles. Gabby got Housewife of the Week for her brawl with Sister Mary Bernard and also being manipulative enough and smart enough to get Sister Mary Bernard sent away to Alaska.
Yeah, so she got the fuck out of here, yeah.
Yeah, without much work, actually. She literally just went to confession and was like, Sister Mary Bernard's fucking my husband.
Why did she? I'm like, you should have just done that in the first place.
I know, she wasted a lot of time. So, that's what happened with Gabby. It was all about Sister Mary Bernard was back. Carlos was nagging her to have a baby after her recent miscarriage. Mm-hmm. So, bad move, Carlos. But at the end, they come to the conclusion. Well, he threatens her with an annulment, and that really sparks her to be like, let's get this bitch sent away. Because I know she's the one who's been pushing Carlos for this annulment. She goes to the church to throw it in Sister Mary Bernard's face that she'll be freezing her little butt off in Alaska. And then they get in a fight. And then she comes home, and she's like, I do want to have a baby with you, Carlos.
After he makes it clear, though, that, like, he'll stay with her regardless.
Yeah, it was a very heartfelt moment. Mm-hmm. But listen to our last episode to hear all about it in depth. So that's what was going on with Gabby, our housewife of the week.
Yeah. So next we had Susan. We'll talk about Susan. So she somehow convinced Dr. Ron to date her the previous episode, and this episode kind of focused on how you shouldn't date your patients if you're a doctor, I guess. They kind of get into it because we find out that Dr. Ron has either never done a surgery or never done a splenectomy, one of the two. And so Susan's not super comfortable with him doing her surgery. And this kind of just causes some pushback, and, like, he gets his feelings all hurt, and they have, like, a little showdown. And then she goes to the hospital and decides to tell him that she's not going to compromise anymore for a man's approval. And he's like, no, you're right about everything. Like, I can't be your doctor because, like, basically I want to date you. And they kiss.
Like, yeah. It was lame.
Yeah, now that I've, like, summed it up like this, I'm like, wow, that was very...
Dr. Ron is very aloof. Like, he doesn't have big surgeon energy. Like,
no.
If a medical professional is doing surgery on me, I want to feel like he's, like, with it. Like, yeah. I want to feel like he knows what he's doing. He has Excel spreadsheets for, like, minimal things in his, like, you know, minuscule things in his life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that he's really, like, detail-oriented. I don't get those vibes at all from Dr. Ron. I get, like, weird, like, not all there energy from him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Not sure where this relationship's gonna go, nor do I care.
I know, I'm kind of like, let's get this show on the road,
like,
here.
Can we get him out of the show already? Like, I don't like him. He was my second choice for a kill last week, but I went with Danielle. I went with Danielle, and I'll tell you why, because Bree's storyline was all about Danielle and Matt and Betty Applewhite. And although I liked the collab there, I liked the feature of the Applewhites on the track, I didn't really love Danielle. She was, we see her truly bratty nature. It made me miss Andrew in the worst way possible. So Danielle is, like, having sex with Matt, or almost having sex with him. She's been dating him for, like, 3 weeks now or so. We don't know. Not very long.
Mm-hmm.
And Bree catches them, like, canoodling, and she sends Matt home, where Betty Applewhite just slaps him in public. And nowadays, like, somebody would call CPS on you for sure.
Oh, my God, yeah.
But she slapped him pretty hard, like, strong hands. And Danielle is, like, mad about this. She won't forgive Bree. She says very nasty, childish, like, teenage angst things to her. And then she ends up spilling, like, her family's biggest secret to Matt. Not on accident, on purpose, in order to keep him around.
So they could, like, blackmail each other's families, I guess? I don't know. It's kind of insane.
Yeah, she tells him because Bree sees Caleb in the window at a certain point, the sex slave son that they're holding hostage. He's moved upstairs. He's been granted that liberty. And Bree sees him. And then Danielle hears Bree, like, about to tell the whole neighborhood about Caleb because he's wanted by the police.
Mm-hmm.
And Danielle, in order to stop this, Danielle's like, my family has secrets, Matt. And then she tells him, and he goes to Miss Betty Applewhite, and it's like, guess what? My new girlfriend just told me. Like, we're fucking staying on Wisteria Lane. And then Betty goes to confront Bree, and is like, I'm gonna tell Gabby and Carlos that you killed their mother / mother-in-law if, like, you ever mention a word about Caleb, so you're gonna shut the fuck up. And
yeah.
And then they play poker together. So.
Yep.
Fun very times. Yeah, but I had to kill Danielle because she's so fucking stupid. Like,
she's not a team player for her family. And
no, she can't read a room.
I know. This is, like, low-key. This is something I'd expect from Andrew, not from her.
Andrew would do it, like, purposefully, and he would have, like, he'd be thinking, like, four steps ahead. Danielle was thinking 0.5 steps ahead. She was like, how do I get dick down by Matt?
Yeah, she has her priorities, I guess.
Yeah, I so it's okay. We've all been dickmatized before.
Oh, yeah.
But this is Danielle's turn, so...
Yeah, no, that was kind of the highlight story of the episode. And last but not least, we have Lynette. So Lynette is working on like some ad thing, some marketing thing. And honestly, everything I know about the marketing industry now that I think about it is because of the show. But anyway, Lynette needs help with it basically. And Tom helps her and then they get the account and Tom kind of decides that like he wants to go back to work. And he makes this clear when Lynette talks about how they're hiring someone at her job. They need to hire someone. And she asks him if he knows of anybody. And he's like, why not me? And she's like, fuck no. And kind of laughs in his face. It says it's a disaster. But Tom's like, whatever. Like, we can afford nannies and stuff if I work. So, like, the kids won't be a problem. And he decides to show up to the interview using the name Tom Cavos. Some fun little manipulating from the men on this episode. And in his interview, he and Ed just, like, hit it off right off the bat. So Ed's like, we're hiring him, basically. And back at home, Lynette tells Tom that if he's going to work with her, then he can never feel resentment again about the promotion debacle from the first season and that she has to be forgiven for it. And he tells her that he already has forgiven her. And then they kiss and he thanks her for the job. And it's kind of pretty little bow on top. A lot of this, like, I kind of said this last episode, but it does feel like a lot of their issues this season get resolved in one episode pretty quick. So I am hoping for some more, like, multiple episode arc, you know, with them, at least.
Yeah. Let's see. So that's where we left off, basically, with everybody. Mm-hmm. There was no Paul, Zach, or Mike. And yeah. That's that on that. So we have high hopes. I think I gave it a pretty high marking in the fours. So it got like an A recording for me, A marks. And then Jordan gave it like in the three range. So
3.75. It wasn't a horrible episode. I just feel like it was missing some elements that make it like a great episode, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't. There was not a lot of magic besides the... for me, the Gabby and Carlos moment. Mm-hmm. But like I said, today we're watching season 2, episode 14, Silly People. So we're going to get a continuation on what's happened with everybody. So that's good. But for now, before we go and watch the episode, we're going to do some desperate deeds.
Yes. So I can go first if you want.
Okay. Why don't you? You're more than... Yes. Go ahead.
So my desperate deed is this, like, memory that haunts me from third grade to this day. So in elementary school, even younger, there was a day where my grandparents had bought me this really cute, like, little outfit. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, I was so excited to wear it. And so it was like a nicer outfit. So to wear it to school was kind of like dressing up. But I was like, whatever, I like it. I don't give a fuck. I'm 8 or however old I am. So it was like this skirt and like a cute little top and like a little sweater. And I was like feeling myself. I roll up to school and everybody kind of looked at me like I was insane when I walked in. And I was like, what's happening? Like everybody was like giving me looks and stuff. Turns out that day we had a field trip to like this farm thing, and I like completely forgot about it, and apparently my mom and dad had too, because they didn't say anything to me on the way to school about my outfit choice. This like field trip was like we had to do like log rolling and like reach inside Stop. Of a cow's stomach. I had to jump over giant logs in a little skirt. And like I had to like they had us do that thing where they like open the side of a cow. Like they have you ever done that?
No.
So to check cow stomachs, what they do, like live cows, is they cut them open and you can reach in there. And so you wear this like glove thing and you can feel and you can pull stuff out of their stomach to see like why they're sick or whatever. So we got to do that.
your mini in my mini skirt.
In my little skirt and, like, cute little patent leather boots and, like, oh, my God. I was, like...
jump over logs. It has to be dying.
Oh, my God. I like, vividly remember the fact that, like, I couldn't even really jump because I couldn't, like, open my legs enough in the little skirt. So I was like, this is... And they made me do it. They still made me try. So that's, like, haunts me to this day, clearly. So now I have, like, a... Not really, but, like, there is always a part of me that's worried about, like, showing up places overdressed because that was, like, such a tragic experience. And, like, I remember back, Julie and I went to this, like, New Year's party a few years ago, and we were, like, the best-dressed people there. And, like, we weren't overdressed, but we were, like... We were dressed up, like, for sure.
We were the hottest people, and I say it with all confidence that we were the hottest people at this party.
Not only that, we were the tallest people at this party. Like, we were giant women in, like, bright, like, sequins-y New Year's-y outfits, and I was like, wow, this is...
Everybody was wearing, like, Forever 21 type, like, outfits, like, with weird, like, slits places, like, dresses that just looked cheap and, like... Not that our dresses were wig, like, you weren't even wearing a dress, but, like, not that our clothes were expensive or anything, but we just, yeah, it was, like, sequin, like, it was proper New Year's attire.
I was wearing, like a high neck, long sleeve, completely black sequin dress for that night.
Yeah, and I was wearing, like, a lacy type of dress with a fake fur jacket.
Yeah, so we, like, balled out, and we had, like, high, like, heeled boots on. And we're already, I guess, kind of tall.
Yeah, we're kind of tall. I feel like I did wear, like, little heels.
Yeah,
we were so tall. And, like, I was still taller than, like, maybe, like, the tallest guy there was my friend's boyfriend, who was not eligible and not that I'd even want that. Like, it was just, like, really bad. Everybody was short. And then, like, man. Okay, I guess my desperate deed will have to do with this New Year's party. But, like, God, it was horrifying. It's literally the worst party. Like, I don't know if anybody's done this where you're like, hey, I have this, like, party we could go to tonight. And it ends up being, like, the lamest party of your entire life. And, like, that is now an impression that they have of you, and you can never live it down. Like, so that's what this party was for me, because I was like, this is kind of, like, all I know that's going on tonight. Like, we could go. It should be fun. There'll be people there. And, like, I don't think it's, like, too hard to expect, like, hot people to be places in L.A.
At a New Year's party in L.A., yeah. Like, of course.
But it wasn't like that. Because we walked in and, like, the door was, like, locked. Like, the door to the apartment was locked. But we could hear everybody, like, singing at the top of their lungs. So we walked in. It's, like, maybe 11:45. Mm-hmm. 11, I don't know. It was sometime in the 11 o'clock hour. So it's not New Year's. It's not like they're singing some sort of New Year's song or, like, counting down. It's like they were singing, like, 2000s emo pop.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, a Mr. Nice Guy or whatever the killer song is. Like,
yeah.
Mr. Brightside. Mr. Nice Guy.
Mr. Nice Guy. I'm like, I don't even remember.
I don't know what song. It's seared in my brain. And we walk in and, like, they are doing a sing-along, and there's, like, a dude on the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And my desperate... It's not my desperate deed, but I have to say, and it's a disclaimer for anybody, that if you are the person playing guitar at a party and starting a sing-along, and you just whip out an acoustic guitar, I'm sorry, you're desperate. There's no reason. I hate with my whole heart. I hate a sing-along party. I hate when people are playing guitars at parties. Like, mm-hmm. I don't like it. That's not a party activity.
Yeah.
Like, don't. It's desperate. And no, I don't want to fuck you because you're playing the guitar.
And maybe, like, that's fine for, like, a chill, like, hangout. But a New Year's Eve party? Like, no. That was not the place nor the time.
I guess.
And that night, we had started the night at this, like, movie thing. And it was, like... one of those, like, 70s disasters movies, and they were going to play two of them, but we left before the second one to go to this party.
And we both agreed we should have just fucking stayed
at that movie. Because we had a blast at the movie. Like, it people was were so laughing.
Fun. Like, we died in adventure.
Yeah. Everybody was chilling. Like, the crowd was having fun, and I'm like, wow.
Maybe it was such a vibe to just dress up and go to the movie that year. Yeah. Like, oh, this was before COVID even, too.
Yeah,
like,
this was our last New Year's before COVID.
God, it was a nightmare. So... yeah, that happened, and you're desperate if you're playing guitar, and it's okay to be overdressed sometimes, but not at a log rolling farm.
No,
day.
No. So. It was like truly, I never dressed up for school again after that. I was like, fuck this. I'm so
I have a traumatized. Bad track record. I've told you, I am always either under or overdressed for everything. And it's not uncommon in my life to just show up places way underdressed.
Mm-hmm. I feel that.
It stresses me out, but I refuse to, like, get ready all the time, like, to go places. Yeah. Everybody just needs to get on my level of, like, frumpiness sometimes.
Like, I feel like we should have a better, like, frump to dress up ratio, because, yeah, I do feel like we're expected to dress up more than I'm, like, makeup's expensive. I don't want to go through it so fast. Like, well, I don't know.
LA is hard, too, because, like, there's a lot of, like, lazy chic going on here. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, you could be wearing sweatpants to brunch, and it, like, is fine if you're hot enough, I guess. Like,
or if you're wearing, like, the right brand, I guess.
Yeah, I guess if it's, like, expensive, but, like, I don't know. Some girls just pull it off way better, but ugh, fuck. Yeah, don't play guitar at a party. I'm scarred.
That's the lesson from today's episode.
I mean, I did appreciate Zach. When like, every time we see Zach, he's, like, jamming on his porch, and it clearly turns Julie on. So
yeah, he's always fiddling around on his little guitar.
Yeah, he's finding an escape through music from Paul. Mm-hmm. I guess. But those are our desperate deeds. We hope you're warmed up for the episode now. I wasn't sure what I was going to go with this day, so I'm glad we brought up the New Year's party. Fuck.
The infamous party.
Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and watch the episode, season 2, episode 14, Silly People. You can watch on Hulu or Amazon Prime, and we'll be right back. But before we go, make sure you do your due diligence and buckle up.
Buckle up. Bree visits Caleb, and Betty finally comes clean. Susan needs surgery and desperately tries to get health insurance with Carl's help. Gabby and Carlos have their second experience with slave labor. Lynette helps Tom with his new boss's frat-like hazing. Mike's old boss finds out about his grandson and gives Mike an ultimatum.
So we have the return of slave labor in the Solis household. I feel like it's Carlos's fate. He can't escape it.
Mm-mm.
And I love that Gabby is there for it. Gabby's really pushing. And Carlos did not once mention, like, I got put away for slave labor.
Yeah.
To Gabby. He was just like, this probably isn't right.
Yeah. Probably. Even though I went to prison for it. Probably not right.
But Gabby got her way anyway. So... really love where we went there, but I feel like we're a little bit all over the map with this episode on what's happening.
Mm-hmm. I did not expect, like, the slave labor to come to Gabby and Carlos based on how they opened the episode.
Not at all. I feel like the writers were like, Carlos is going to get way involved with the church where there's just, like, a lot of church shit. Cause the church basically drops her off. And, like, I don't know what type of
Carlos. Well, because Carlos volunteered. Oh, I think they called him. Because he's like, yeah, she's going to stay with us.
He could, like, chill a little bit on the church shit. I feel like he's taking on a lot of responsibility there.
Yeah, I agree.
Shouldn't he get a job, like, a post-prison
I don't
job?
Really know how they have money. I don't really understand the economics here. I'm so confused.
It really seems like all their legal issues just disappeared.
Like, he's out of prison, and then did they have just, like, money put away?
That's what I'm wondering, because I'm like, I know that all of his funds were, like, tied up while he was in prison for a bit, and then all of a sudden it's like he just got out of prison and they were, like, chilling again. Like, nothing ever, they never spoke. Oh, and she was, like, shopping a ton after her miscarriage, so I guess she just had the money again.
I know, I remember vaguely there were, like, accounts in the Cayman Islands, but they never really made clear what happened with those, because, like, she burned the paperwork, then she had the paperwork. It was, like, a whole thing.
Yeah, if we discuss this in depth, remind us. I'm sure that we did, like, know how she got the money. But, like, I'm just thinking about David. She hired that lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Then Carlos just got out on his own way.
Yeah.
And we never talked about the money again, but...
I know. But they seem to have it, so whatever.
But, yeah, we'll take it from the top because the slave comes from this intro.
Mm-hmm.
And Maxine Bennett... I know she's a pretty famous actress. Like, I've seen her in other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't look into her. My bad, you guys.
She's on like Glee, Role Models.
Yeah, she kills it. She's a working lady, but so we get to see her. So once a month, the creme de la creme would attend a semi-formal luncheon at the home of Maxine Bennett. Mary Alice comes in hot. Everyone loved them, but one redhead, a.k.a. Bree. She was convinced that Maxine was a liar. Maxine liked to brag that she did all of her own cooking, and because each course was served promptly and presented with flair and was positively mouthwatering, Bree knew that something was the fuck up. There was some help. And sadly for Maxine Bennett, she's going to prove it. And I like that Brie is just so, like, manipulative. She's like, can I have your caterer's number? And Maxine's like, I don't have a caterer. And Brie's like, no way, because, like, I couldn't even do this. And Maxine is backhanded, and she's like, well, maybe you're just not as organized as me. And I like how she's just feeling herself there. And these other chicks are like, Brie, that's kind of rude. Like, what the fuck? Don't ask her that. And, Brie just says it like it is. She says, I have this recipe. It takes 6 hours to make. So tell me what's good with that. But then the FBI busts in, which this has to be one of my favorite intros. It's just interrupted by the FBI and they're looking for Maxine. And then they bust in the kitchen and there's this Asian chick cooking, like icing cupcakes, and they take her and arrest Maxine for involuntary servitude. Slavery is still real, people.
Yeah, and fucking insane how they play this for comedy. Like, a fucking
involuntary servitude, you mean an indentured servant? Like,
yeah,
I don't understand. So yes, this is a hot topic on Desperate Housewives, and the other chicks are like, Brie, what's going on? And Brie's like, guess she had a slave.
Like, yeah, she's like so smirking about it too.
And this one chick is like, I can't believe it, but Brie could, because the proof was in the pudding, is what Mary Alice says. So yep. This is up there for me on cold open.
I know, this is fantastic. I love this opening.
Loved how that went down. We don't see any more of Maxine, but it comes full circle. So then we do our little intro, and then Mary Alice pops back in with some words of wisdom, saying the world is filled with unlikely friendships, odd pairings that to the casual observer make no sense at all, but if we look closer, we can see why these alliances form. After all, a shared purpose can give shared enemies common ground. So it starts with the gals together a bit. Susan and Edie go to Brie, and they're like, why are you friends with Betty? This is weird.
Yeah,
and
they're like, you were the one that was most gung-ho about this.
Yeah, like they're like, don't you remember how you literally went to prison after going to lunch with that cop to get info on her? Like, they're like, don't you remember it? But Brie plays it cool, and she's like, what? Like, why would you say that? And they do say, like, nobody was more adamant than you. Brie dodges this all, though, and they were like, could this flip-flop have something to do with Danielle and Matt? And Brie is also embarrassed about this, I guess, because she's like, who told you? And I'm like, they literally make out in the park in the center of town, like, every day. Like,
I know. And I'm also like, why do you care so much if people know? Like, I don't know. I thought her reaction was super weird.
Yeah. So they're asking her about this. They're like, we know you must have a reason for hanging out with her, but like, can you clue us in? And Brie is still dodging. She's just like, I know what I'm doing. Just trust me. And if you can't do that, then perhaps I've overestimated the depth of our friendship. And then Edie calls her a bitch, and Susan's like, you could have sugarcoated that. And Edie's like, I did. So that's the beginning. So we sense that there's going to be more Applewhite Brie drama. And I'm there for it.
I'm here for it. That. Now that they're involving her like more with the characters, I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah, but I feel like we can start with Gabby, because that servant from the beginning ends up at Gabby's house. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
And the whirlwind that fate is. The servant was given to the guy who just got done serving time for slave labor.
I know the irony.
So Gabby comes home to Carlos talking to the priest, and they introduce Xiao. I'm going to say this wrong a million times. Xiao Ming, the lady who was Maxine's slave. And Gabby says she looks well fed. And I'm like, that's such poor taste of a joke. But the church is basically arranging for her to go back to China. But until then, she needs somewhere to stay. And Carlos offered his guest room. And at first, Gabby is not really on board. But Carlos is like, it's just a few days. And Gabby's like, we're too involved in the church, like I've been saying. But they end up agreeing that it's going to be fine. She also makes a joke about a Catholic Underground Railroad. So lots of poor taste jokes here.
Yeah. It's kind of wild, actually.
So that's that. Yao Ming is going to stay. And then Gabby comes home in a hot outfit and she sees Yao and is like, ew. Yeah. And she's like, do you have to sit around here all day? Shouldn't you be out, like, experiencing things? And she has one of Gabby's couture jackets, and she fixes it. Mm-hmm. At first, she's like, how could you be touching my things? But then she sees that the stitching is, like, perfected, and she's like, wow, you could be useful. And this is typical Gabby fashion.
And she, then, like, cooked Gabby a fuck ton of food, too.
Yeah, she made her tons of – she made her, like, a buffet of things. And Gabby is like, yes. So – Carlos comes home later and Gabby's like eating some of these pastries in bed, and Gabby is like, do you know like that China is a communist country basically, and if you speak out against the government you're basically fucked, and like how could we send Yao back there? And Carlos is like, you really need to fucking chill. Like, we're not going to keep her as a servant to do our housework. He's like,
does this have anything to do with Xiaomi, like, waxing the floors downstairs?
And Carlos is like, she just got done being a slave. We can't force her to be our maid. So she says that we're not forcing her. We'll pay her whatever she wants.
But then she's like, good thing she was a slave, though, because she won't ask for much.
Yeah. Which I'm like, what the fuck? So that's basically it. I think Carlos and her, Carlos starts trying to fuck her and she walks away because he's like, we're not keeping her as a slave. And she says, this isn't about me. It's about our great nation. I have no intention of sexually satisfying a man who isn't willing to stand up and help spread the ideals of the United States. So which way do you think Gabby votes? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, no.
Yes. So next thing we know, Gabby's in the bathroom and Yao is just combing her hair like it's not, I'm sorry, I've never
like it's 1715 and we've got our servant girl.
I have literally never combed anybody else's hair, not a friend's hair. Mm-mm. Like maybe my grandma's hair, my mom's hair. Like I can't imagine I would even want a maid to be combing my hair. I'd be like, don't touch my fucking hair.
Yeah.
So Gabby just says it. She's like, you're stupid for wanting to go back to China. You could have nice things here. We're probably more alike than you would guess. I'm from a small town, too. I didn't have anything. And that's why I love America. I'm like, did this air in October of a voting year or something?
Or, like, just post 9/11 or something? Like, that's how this feels.
It's so crazy. She's like, anything is possible. And then she looks at one of Gabby's bracelets, and Gabby's just like, here, take it. Also would never do this with my things. I love it. Like, if I have something, I usually bought it for a reason. I'm not like, just here, have it.
Yeah.
But Xiao is like, OMG, I love you, and hugs her. And Gabby's like, glad you like it. Now brush my hair. Then Xiao is getting the boot. They've arranged for her to go back to China. And on her way out, Gabby's like, we loved having you. So this is a very different perspective than at the beginning. She says, you're a special girl. They two seem to have a connection. Like, I thought the acting was good. Like, Gabby seems legitimately sad this chick is leaving.
Yeah.
And then, Xiao is crying. She's crying. And Carlos is like, don't tell me you're crying because, like, we can't have her as a maid. And Gabby's like, she wouldn't have just been a maid. She would have been the best maid ever. And then Xiao refuses to leave. She, like, makes a big scene at the van, and she wants to stay and work for Gabby. And she says that Mrs. Solis treated her with more kindness than she ever knew and thinks of her as family. And they're like, you can stay. And Carlos is like, not again with the slave labor, Jesus.
Yeah, he's like, fuck, so, I can't escape this.
Was it a one-off storyline? Maybe. But we're obviously going to see more of Xiao, hopefully. Was it fucked up? Maybe. Were there a lot of jokes and poor taste? Yes.
Yeah.
But I found something endearing about this storyline.
I did too. No, I kind of liked it. I think it was a good, like, I don't know. It's a good setup too. And I'm excited to see where this goes.
Yeah. So that's what's up with Gabby.
So next, do you want me to jump into Susan?
Yeah, you can cover crazy Susan again. Silly Susan.
Silly Susan. So you've heard me get infuriated the past few episodes at the lack of understanding of healthcare in this show. And I even mentioned when Susan was, like, faking it at the hospital, I'm like, she better have good healthcare because this is, like, thousands of dollars she's racking up.
And we talked about it because all of a sudden this storyline, like, she's very concerned about her health insurance. And I was like, I don't remember her like, I don't even remember them mentioning that she didn't have health insurance last ep.
No, they didn't.
Or ever.
That's why I'm like, I think they, like, fucked up because, like, they forgot that it, like, surgery is not the only part of healthcare that costs money. Like, you have to have health insurance for everything. I don't know, because, like, it's just so bizarre to me that they wrote all that, and then all of a sudden they're like, she doesn't have health care. I'm like,
and okay. The MRI is expensive, too.
Yeah. Well, regardless, Susan, we find out that Susan does not have health care, so she goes to Carl for help, because he's a lawyer and her ex-husband. I'm not exactly sure why she goes running to him, but, like, they're talking, and Edie's kind of, like, hanging around while they're talking, just, like, eavesdropping, I don't know, marking her territory, who knows what she's doing. But she's like, well, maybe you need to, like, marry someone quickly. And Carl is, like, not vibing with this idea, but Susan's like, that's a great idea, like, oh my god. And Edie's like, yeah, it's just gonna be hard, you know, we just gotta find someone who's willing to marry you last minute, which I thought was a fun little dig. So then, like, pretty quick, I don't know if it was a day, a week, or whatever, Susan meets up with Edie at a coffee shop, and Edie's there with this guy named Gary, and he's willing to marry Susan last minute, and instead of, like, even, like, staying to be there for that, Edie just leaves, which I thought was kind of weird. I'm like,
I know, she's like, I'll leave you to it.
I know, I was like, that's awkward, but anyway, we find out that Gary, like, he needs a wife to make his mom happy, because Susan's like, why does this guy need a wife so desperately? And basically, Gary's like, I've just been kind of waiting for my mom to die to come out, because I figured, like, what's the point? But she's, like, not dying, and then she made it clear that she's gonna hold on until I get married. So he's like, this will make her happy, and I could get my inheritance faster, and it all kind of works out. So Susan's clearly, like, not disturbed by this reasoning, but she's kind of like, ah, okay, sure. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. But, then, I'm pretty sure, then, oh, she goes to tell Mike.
Susan goes to Mike.
Yeah, that's the next part. So Susan then ends up going to tell Mike because she always has to cause unnecessary drama for some reason.
It's like, Mike literally doesn't care what you're doing. Doesn't care.
It's like, sure. Yeah, I just found it, like, super weird and, like, again, a very desperate attempt to get his attention. Like, can you just leave him alone, Susan? And also, it's not like she's actually getting married, so there's no need for her to tell Mike. Like, it's not like, I don't know, because right up front she goes, I'm getting married. Well, he's a gay guy. Well, it's for the health insurance. And I'm like, you're really just making yourself look even more embarrassing, but okay. And he, like, mentions that he knows about the doctor that she's seeing, and...
Oh, yeah, I forgot that he does
he's
know,
like,
about that.
Yeah, he's like, people talk, and that's... They don't really go more... I'm like, okay. This was just, like, a really weird conversation.
It was, like, the perfect length of interaction for them, because they're annoying. Like, I can't believe it. Mike still even, like, is entertaining this. Susan's annoying for going over there, but then Sullivan shows up.
Yeah. That and it's weird because cough. It's weird because he's like, well, can the surgery wait? And she's like, not really. He's like, oh, well, I guess this makes sense then. Like, he's just kind of like, all right, have at it. Like, bye.
Yeah, he's know. Like, I guess it's not that crazy then. Go get married. Yeah. Like, but yeah, Sullivan the dirty cop from last season shows up because there's some other stuff with, like, that Mike's old boss going on that we can get into later. But their conversation's interrupted, basically, and then we go on.
So then the next time we see Susan, she's at this, like, disgusting, like, chapel thing. It's like a strip mall. It's, like, so it's ugly. Like hood. It's, like, got an office in it. Like, it's just really sad.
Like you can get a cash advance next door, probably.
So they're at the chapel, and Susan meets Gary's life partner. And his life partner, Steven, is, like, really fed up with this. And he's, like, freaking out about it because he's, like, proposed a bunch of times to Gary with no response.
He also thinks that Susan has cancer.
Yeah. So he thinks Susan has cancer, but he's, like, annoyed that Gary's, like, willing to go to all these lengths to marry, like, a woman, but, like, can't. Like, I don't know. So they're, like, feuding, and there's, like, this undercurrent of stress. So they get into, like, this leads to, like, a big argument, and basically, Gary leaves Susan at the altar, and Susan's, like, literally can't even keep a gay guy around for a sham marriage. Like, kind of sad.
Wow, I love your take on it. She can't even keep a gay guy around.
Quirky Susan, the gay guy left her at the altar.
Silly Susan, like.
Yeah, so later, she's, like, eating cake, sitting outside on her porch, all depressed. And she's like, I need this operation. I don't know what I'm going to do. Oh, she's telling this to Carl. Sorry. Carl walks up, and he's, like, sitting on the porch with her. And she's, like, freaking out. And so Carl's like, well, what if I marry you? And I'm like, please, Susan, don't be so fucking stupid. Like, oh, my God. So Carl's like, well, I have a great health plan, and, like, he's like, you'd be covered instantly, which, folks, I work in HR at my job. This is not how health insurance works. You don't just get covered the day you get married. Like,
I mean, there's you gotta, like, process. File paperwork. Yeah, you have to file paperwork. It takes a while. Like, at least a month, for sure.
Yeah, so basically, like, they have this whole ass conversation, and she's like, we were actually married, and he's like, you know, who cares? I've always felt bad about walking out the way I did. And she's like, okay. So she says yes, which is just, like, another Susan, like, making crazy decisions. And then they decide not to tell Edie because, like, that's smart. I don't know why they wouldn't just tell Edie. Like, I don't, like, they're just setting themselves up for, like,
I'm literally, like, rolling my eyes at this whole thing.
Yeah, like, it's just, like, adding extra drama. I'm like, Susan, okay, last season there was an episode where, like, she and Edie kind of talk about, like, why they don't like each other. And this is, like, peak reasoning. Like, Susan is just, like, adds drama to everything. Instead of, like, doing things the easy way, she's like, let's hide it. Which is clearly, like, just going to make...
Yeah.
It's just going to make Edie think that something shady, like, shadier is going on. But it's like, okay.
Like, Susan, like, is actually a bad person.
Yeah, like, this is gross. Like, I think this is, like...
Who in their right mind is like, I'm going to marry the guy that cheated on me just to get health insurance? Like, any normal, just do a GoFundMe. Fuck, I think it was around in 2005. Like, I don't understand why you're like, I have to get married so that I can use his health. Like, using a person to get their health insurance. I'm sure that she could find another way. Like, her fucking stepfather owns a restaurant. I'm sure he could front you the money and you could pay him back. Like,
oh yeah, her mom has, like, 100 engagement rings she could have.
Yeah, like, why is this the only way possible that this was ever going to happen? Like, I think it's absurd.
Not only that, but it's just, like, they do it in, like, a super shady way. Like, not obviously, like, if Edie finds out, she's going to be pissed. So it's just, like, why are you making it, like, setting her up to be even more pissed off if you don't?
Carl's a bad person, too, for even suggesting this. If I was Edie in Edie's position, obviously I'd be 100% her. I'd be like, why did you even fucking marry her? Like, I get that she needed health insurance, but, like, whatever. She can figure it out. Like, she's your ex-wife.
Yeah. I don't know. Carl's also a lawyer. Like, can he not just loan her the money? I don't know.
Yeah, he if also he's willing to marry her. Money. Like, what if the he's, fuck?
He's clearly willing to help, so it's like, okay, then give her the money for it. Then you don't have to get married.
There's, like, a million other, like, million and one other ways this could have gone down, but, like...
Yeah.
once again,
but classic Susan has to be Susan. Yeah, so extra drama.
I'm going to talk a little bit about Mike because we touched on, like, what's going on. So we are, once again, like, there's some scenes with Mike's boss that, if we recall, Mike's boss is dying. Mike's old boss, the one that was Deidre's father. Noah. But in my heart, Mike's boss. So Noah is just chilling. And Felicia, if we remember, is now his nurse, like, out of a bigger plan of some sort. We don't know what yet, but she brings him a letter and, like, some pills because he's dying. And the letter just says in all caps, like, really terrible, like, all caps, you have a grandson.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, get me that phone. And she gives him the phone, and he calls Sullivan, the dirty cop, and is like, Delfino's been holding out on me. And then that's when Sullivan, we see Sullivan go to Mike when he interrupts him and Susan, and Sullivan checks out Susan as she walks away. I got a note, and Mike's like, what the fuck do you want? It wasn't enough that you beat the shit out of me last season. And he's like, it's not about me, but it's about Noah. Like, where's his grandchild? He fucking knows. And don't say that you don't know. Like, I fucking know, you know. So that's a lot of I know.
Everybody when he knows says, like, when he also is like, when Noah Taylor wants something, like, he gets it, basically. And I'm like, okay.
So everybody knows everything now. We all know about, there's a grandson, aka Zach. And Sullivan's basically like, if you pretend that you don't know, I'm gonna go looking, and like, you really don't fucking want that. And I also know about your old girlfriend and your old girlfriend's daughter, and I'm gonna, like, fuck with them if you don't do, like, present the grandchild to Noah. And then Mike's pissed, and he's like, tell no, I'll be over in the morning, Jesus. So that's what he does. Mike goes to him, and he's like, yeah, your grandson's name is Zach Young. And he ended up with this family on Wisteria Lane, and Noah has, like, reasonable questions. He's like, how did that happen? Like, what the fuck? And Mike kind of lies again. He's like, how do you, well, not really lies, because I guess, like, Mary Alice and Paul kidnapped him, basically. But Mike's like, how do you think she was strung out? And Noah's like, I want to see him. I can snap my fingers and make it happen if you deny me that. And Mike's like, do you really want to meet him that way? So basically he gives Mike 2 days to go and get Zach Young and convince him to meet his granddaddy.
Which, his granddaddy's rich, so I don't know. If I were Mike, I'd be like, I guess it's good.
Really, like, a come up for Zach Young.
I know. I'm like, I don't know, help provide for this kid. Thought
everything was horrible. He can buy another puka shell necklace and a bracelet to match. But, yeah, I can go ahead and cover Bree, and then you can finish with Lynette, because I know you love Lynette's storyline of raw meat. Raw meat and frat pranks.
I'm here for it.
We'll talk more about Danielle being stupid, because that's what this storyline is about again. If you thought last episode was bad, get ready. So Danielle is brushing her hair, and I just have to note, she's not as cool as Andrew. Where is that guy? Bree,
yeah, I miss him.
Is like, stop brushing your hair at the table. And Danielle's like, oh my God, you're talking to me. Does that mean you've forgiven me? And Bree's like, no, you betrayed me. No. Bree, this family, and you're not even sorry. And Danielle is literally like, whatever. And Bree grabs her sassy hand and is like, look, if they go to the police, Andrew could go to prison. What don't you fucking understand? And Danielle is like, they won't go to the police as long as you don't talk about Caleb. And Bree has a good question. She's like, why are they hiding him? Like, why? I don't get it. And
she's like, they get to know everything about me. Like, what the fuck?
I know. Yeah. She's like, you ruin things, Danielle. And she's like, Danielle's like, why don't you go to Betty and tell her you need to know what's going on? She'll tell you.
She's like, she's nice. She'll tell you.
And Bree is like, you think that if I just walk on over there, she's going to be nice and hand over all of her secret? Danielle, don't be fucking stupid. And Bree says that her stepmother once told her when she was young that she was lucky. She was beautiful. She possessed wit, cunning, and insight. these were weapons women needed to survive in this world. And Danielle is like, so? And she's like, take care of your looks, Danielle. You don't have anything else at your disposal. And I'm like, damn, Bree.
Bree was like, stab, 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 her own daughter. I fucking like, loved it.
She's like, I love Andrew more.
Yeah, she's like, at least Andrew's smart with how he fucks around with me.
Yeah, I know. She's like, I can at least respect Andrew.
Yeah. She's
like, you're a fucking idiot. I love this. This is too funny to me. And then Bree came up with a great plan to get the truth she needed. She watches the Applewhites leave, and she thought about how much, like, the previous owners of the house had trusted her. And she just happens to have a key to their house along with every other house on Wisteria Lane, apparently, in this cupboard.
Mm-hmm.
She brings Caleb some goodies. He introduces her. She introduces herself. She's like, I came to see you. Your mother told me about you, and I thought we could talk. And I brought you cobbler. And Caleb is just jazzed to have, like, human interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Bree is like, does anyone know that you're here? He says that she's pretty, which is a common through line. He might murder her eventually, it seems. And she's like, that's sweet. Like, where have you been living this whole time? Upstairs. And he's like, no, I just moved up there. I had a room in the basement. Want to see it? And I'm like nervous about this because she goes down to the sex dungeon. I'm like, what if he locks her in there?
I know.
It doesn't happen. Spoiler. So, she sees the chains and shit, and she's like, oh, my God, have you been down here all these months? And he's like, yeah, no big deal. And she's also like, you had to wear the chains, too? And he's like, a lot of the time. And Bree's like, what the hell? I wouldn't even do this to Andrew or Danielle.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought about it. She's like, wow, what a nice invention for my children.
Yeah, she's like, I'm buying this house when they leave. Yeah. Locking her kids up.
No, she's very curious about why someone would do this. And he says that he hurt a girl. Then she died. Her name was Melanie. And she was pretty just like you. And Bree's like, I should probably go. Next thing we know, Betty discovers, like, Caleb is like, some redhead woman came over. And so Betty's like, motherfucker. Betty comes to Bree. Caleb told me you visited. And Bree's like, you should have a drink because you're going to need it. And she admits that she broke in, but she's also like, I know about Melanie Foster, so come sit down, we're gonna fucking talk. But it ends up being like really a really empathetic conversation, it seems. I said at the end, I really like thought it had a good conclusion for these women connecting in a weird way, because it started off so like hilarious. But Betty talks about, like, Caleb and how when she's pregnant, she discovered that he was different, like, that he had, like, learning disabilities, it seems, and it was, like, a painful moment in her life, but she didn't cry. She just thought to herself, what's the point? I have to raise him the best that I can. That's my job, and I feel blessed to do that. Mm-hmm. He might have difficulties, but he's, like, has a sweet nature, and I'm sure you've noticed. And Bree's like, I also noticed that you chained him in the basement. And she's like, only because of Melanie. Melanie was a girl that Matt dated. She was a debutante, so probably hot as fuck. Their relationship was full of drama, breaking up, getting back together. And then one night after a blow up, like, they were going to meet at a lumberyard, which never meet at a lumberyard. Why would you do that?
I would never go anywhere like that at night, no matter what.
No, uh-huh. I don't care who's trying to meet me. Meet me at the lumber yard. It's like, what?
Murder yard.
Yeah, a murder yard. So Caleb told Melanie, instead of Matt showing up, Caleb showed up and he told Melanie that she was in love with her and that if he was her boyfriend, he would never break up with her, which is just a flat out lie. He doesn't know that. She laughed. He tried to kiss her. She hit him because she didn't want that. And then he doesn't remember what happened, but there was an axe nearby, so that's why you don't go to the lumber yard and meet up with somebody.
Yeah, there's sharp shit everywhere.
But I couldn't let him go to jail or worse, like, have him put down for his crime. For my crime, she says. And Bree's like, your crime? And she says it was my responsibility to protect him from himself. I'm his mother, and that was my job. And Bree, like, touches her hand and she gets it because she's done a lot for Andrew that he's super ungrateful for. At least Caleb seems somewhat grateful. But that's where it ends. And I'm kind of enjoying this interesting friendship that's growing between them.
I kind of teared up a little bit when, like, Bree put her hand on Betty's.
It was a sweet moment.
Because I think, like, that is true. Like, they both are very devoted mothers with kids who fucked up. And, like, they sadly kind of have to pay the price by, like, hiding these and hiding their children. And it's, like, different experiences, but something they both can relate to each other about.
Yeah, and I think Bree gets it on, like, a larger level. Like, maybe her son, like, obviously, Bree has an issue with Andrew being gay. Mm-hmm. And I think it's super different than Caleb having, like, a learning disability. But it's, like, something that they both feel like they have trouble dealing with to a degree.
I meant more, like, just the bullshit, like, the murder of the girl.
No, I know it's, like, the hiding, yeah, okay. But, like, on a larger level. Yeah, I know, like, mm-hmm. hiding your son's secret. But on a larger level, I think, like, Bree related because she's, yeah. like, oh, my God, my son isn't the way that I wanted him to be either.
Yeah, yeah,
and I feel like that's sure. what Betty is saying almost. Like, he wasn't mm-hmm. the way that I wanted him to be, but I have to deal with it. And, like, yeah. Bree, like, I don't think you should have a problem, like, with somebody being, like, your son no. being gay. But that's, like, what it is in this season.
That's reality, so. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was interesting. I enjoyed it. It was mm-hmm. sweet.
So yeah, no, it was.
I'll let you dig your heels in to Lynette.
Yeah, so really quick before we get into Lynette, I did Google it, and in this episode and the previously on, it does, like, show Susan talking about needing to get her insurance figured out, and, like, according to this trivia, that was actually never shown in the episode.
Okay, good. I thought I was going crazy. I was like, so I don't remember crazy. Anything. Yeah. I don't remember a single thing about insurance. Like.
Yeah, so what this says is the scene from the previously sequence in which Susan is told that her spleen has wandered close to her heart and that she needs to get her insurance figured out by the time of the surgery was never actually shown in any previous episode.
Wow.
Which is crazy okay. because they totally went into, like, that's, like, such a big part. That's her whole story. They didn't even set it up at all.
This episode is so wild, like, for that. Yeah.
Weird. Anyway, so now going back to our last housewife, Lynette. So Tom has started working at her job, and he's having a hard time. His things keep getting rejected, all of his pitches, which is weird because in the last episode, Ed was, like, so gung-ho about Tom and his ideas and, like, his previous work. So it does feel strange to me that Ed's the one that he has to win over this episode. Because yeah. Ed was, like, literally, like, screaming about how much he loved Tom in the last one. So, I don't know.
But I feel like there is a difference. Like, I didn't feel like he needed to connect with Ed. I just feel like he needed to present better work. Like, it seemed like he just didn't like the work. It's not like that Ed didn't like him anymore. It's so weird.
I think, like, it's just weird because they painted it as, like, Ed was, like, low-key. I don't know. It was just, like, not even
crushing on him.
Yeah. So they're, like, talking, and they're coming up with this, like, pitch idea, and Tom mentions that he was in a frat, and Ed is like, oh, I was in a frat. And then they, like, talk so about the frats stupid. They were in. And so this turns into this weird, like, hazing thing where Ed starts, like, offering Tom money to do various challenges at work, starting with trying to catch candies in his mouth, and Ed has to throw them, and basically Tom catches the first two, but the third one lands on his face. And Ed thinks it's, like, the funniest thing ever that Tom failed, and he gives him $200. So, basically, this turns into Ed just, like, demeaning Tom for money, and Lynette does not like this. She's, like, very much uncomfortable by this. So,
I mean, because he's about to eat something out of the toilet.
Also, this is, like, a professional workplace. Like, Tom's making a fucking fool of himself.
Yeah, like, I mean, repeatedly. I don't feel like Lynette was out of line, but they act like she's such a wet blanket. And it's like, yeah. You guys are, like, wasting so much time in the day.
Yeah, so the next day is Tom eating a donut that's dipped in toilet water. And Lynette's like, no. So she pulls Tom out of the bathroom and, like, makes him talk to her. And she's just like, this is not okay. Like, this needs to stop. Like, no more playing games like this. And he's like, whatever. And, like, Ed, like, pops his head out. He's like, come on, Tom. Like, let's go. Let's do this. So, like, finally Lynette's over it, so she goes to, like, talk to Ed about it, and Ed's like, oh, did Tom go crying to mommy? And Lynette's like, no, like, what the fuck? So, like, then he basically accuses her of, like, Tom begging her to get him to back off, and Lynette's like, we shouldn't be doing this, and he's like, Ed's like, this is my company, like, people play by my rules, which is, like, such a fucking, like, douchebag frat boy mentality.
So rude. Yeah.
And so Lynette basically says that she's going to call him out. And she's like, if this is your company, then I'm going to play by your rules. And she says this in front of everybody. So she's like, what do I have to do to get this frat boy crap to stop? And she's like, shave my eyebrows, come to work naked. And he's like, fuck no, I don't have time for this. And so he's like, she basically goads him. And she's like, what do you think? You're going to get beaten by a girl? Which, oh my God, if this is really how her boss works, like, imagine working for someone like this.
No,
like,
what a nightmare. A
fucking child. No wonder Nina was drinking when she left.
So, 10 a.m.
Yeah, so basically Ed is like, okay, so I'm trying to make the workplace fun. He, like, talks the whole room. And I think it's good for morale, but Lynette over here, he might as well have said this bitch over here thinks that this stuff has gotten out of hand.
Yeah, that's literally what it was, though.
Yeah, seriously. And so everyone's, like, kind of, like, giving her shit, and he's like, I respect, like, he gets all phony, and he's like, I respect her work ethic. But, so we're gonna settle the matter, and we're gonna, like, make her eat this raw fucking meat in front of everybody.
Yeah, one of their clients is like a meat company, and he's like, you can eat a whole stack of this raw bacon, it looks like.
Which is, I didn't, like, is pork, like, you can't eat raw pork, right?
You shouldn't. I don't know. I'm sure there's crazy people who do, but it's, you're not supposed to. I think it's really bad. Yeah. Like, they have warnings on menus. They're like, raw, consuming raw or undercooked mm-hmm. meat, it can like, lead to salmonella.
I feel like, especially with pork, they eat slop.
It's super bad for you, so...
Like, I know that with, like, really fancy red meat, you can get away with it. And then, like, sushi.
This looks like motherfucking deli meat.
This is disgusting. So Tom tries to get her to stop, and she's like, well, this is how guys do business, right? I'm just trying to be one of the guys or whatever. And she's just like, fuck it. So she, like... She fucking does it. She starts eating it. And Ed's, like, trying to, like, fuck with her the whole time. He's like, no shame in quitting. And Lynette's like... pushes her hair behind her ears and, like, rolls up the bacon and eats another one. And it's truly disturbing to watch.
Her face is just all colors drained from it. Like, this is also great acting here.
Yeah.
Gabby and Lynette, where's the Emmys? Like.
So she's, like, eating it, and the whole office kind of turns on Ed halfway through.
It's sickening to watch. They thought that she'd throw up, and she doesn't. And so it's, like, sickening at the end where they're, like, she just ate, like, 12 pieces of raw bacon.
Yeah, and everybody in the office is kind of like, this is really gross and demeaning, because there is a point where it's like, we're watching this poor woman eat so much fucking raw meat.
Yeah.
And she wins, and she's like, no more games. And Ed's like, sure, you sucked all the fun out of it anyway. And it's like women just can't win, no matter what they do. Like, they can't fucking win. And Tom kind of, like, comes up to Lynette when she's done, and he's like, that was really something. And she's like, can you get me a fucking bucket? Like,
it was
a nice moment. So Lynette, like, saved Tom from more demeaning acts in the office.
Yeah.
So it was kind of, again, another, like, one episode storyline that solved itself.
Yeah.
But I am proud of Lynette. That was a good wife moment to take care of her husband and take care of business. And also just a
good professional moment to get your office back on track. These idiots. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was a good wife moment. I think Ed is annoying.
He fucking sucks. Like, he's an asshole.
Like, worse than Nina, maybe?
Yeah, Nina's making a lot more sense, I think, now.
I think her actions of, like, being so high-strung... and, like, always working, probably because he did no work. But hoping the Tom and Ed friendship comes to, like, a fruitful place where they are, like, working well together.
Mm-hmm.
I only wish this for Lynette, because I feel like it'd be a nightmare to work with my husband.
Oh my God, I don't know what I would do. I would feel like I'd be going insane. And we've both dated
people at work. It's not that bad when you're working in different departments, I think,
because mm-hmm.
you just, like, see them, and you're like, oh, my babe. And he can go work over there on whatever he works on. But I've never, like, directly worked, like, in partnership with a significant other.
Mm-mm.
So good luck to them. But I did enjoy the storyline. I thought it was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
I agree.
All in all. But we have Mary Alice Young take us out of the episode. She once again reiterates, the world is filled with unlikely friendships. How do they begin? When one person desperately in need of another willing to lend a helping hand, when such kindness is offered, we're able to see the worth of those we had written off. And before we know it, a bond is formed. Regardless of if people can understand it, unlikely friendships start every day. And no one understands this more than the lonely. In fact, it's what they count on. So we did. We see that Carl and Susan have their unlikely partnership, I would call it.
Yeah, there's one didn't really fit the mold of the story, well.
Well, it did because he's, like, helping her out. I think it is a friendship that she can go to Carl. Like, I don't know how much I'd want to go to my ex-husband for something. But
I guess I just don't know how genuine he is. Because in the past, he's, like, been super, like, he's done, like, stuff like this. And then it's all a front for whatever the fuck he's up to.
Yeah, I'm nervous for her. Because he definitely wants to fuck again after their insane chemistry from their last time.
He's a mess.
And then we have Betty and Bree. We have Gabby and her slave. And then Lynette, or Tom and Ed, I think, really. It's not even anything to do with Lynette.
Yeah.
So there we are. There we are. And I think we can go to our fuck, marry, kill.
Yeah. I have my Mary. I would totally marry Lynette. I want to marry her after this.
Oh, shit. Okay.
If she's going to take bigger business like this, fuck yeah. Like, I don't know. I would want Lynette on my team after what she did for Tom.
Okay.
I don't know the others, though. So if you have some off the top of your head.
You have to finish it. Okay. You can't just pass it off.
Okay. I'm like, that was the only one I had locked in. Shit. I would probably fuck. Oh, no. I'm like, who all was in this episode? Now I'm, like, blanking.
Not a ton of fuckable people, gotta say.
Maybe just, I guess, Mike, because he was there and no one else was. I could say him because he was actually in the episode. True.
He never does too wrong.
And then kill. I don't know. Nobody aside, like, Danielle was stupid, but she kind of did her fuck up last episode, so I don't really. And her mom already did kill her with words this episode. Dang, so.
Yeah.
I'd probably kill. Susan's been really annoying. I'd probably kill Ed, Tom's boss, because I just feel like he's a nightmare to work with.
Yeah.
And, like, Susan, I'll give her a pass this time. Even though she's annoying.
I'm taking another route for that. I'd definitely kill Susan so she doesn't have to worry about her health insurance and her spleen wandering into her heart or creating.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'll kill Susan just to save her the worry and hassle there. Mm-hmm. I would marry Zhao Main so that she can stay in the U.S. as she pleases.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't make her work and brush my hair, but she can just chill.
Because she should just be a citizen without.
She seems like a nice girl.
Yeah.
And then I'll have to fuck Mike. I agree. Oh, wait, you married Mike, but I have to
No,
Mike.
I fucked Mike. Oh, okay. I fucked Mike.
Yeah, just to help him get over Susan dying from me killing her. So just help him out there.
Very desperate housewives of you.
Yeah. Just lend a helping hand. So those are my choices. I feel confident in those today.
Okay.
So, Housewife of the Week. I think for me, I think Lynette did something to prove her loyalty and dedication to her family and her work.
Mm-hmm.
By eating raw deli meat, it seems, and probably having the worst sickness for weeks after.
Yeah, having food poisoning for the rest of her life.
So, she would be my... I think Brie comes in a close second because Brie had that clutch, like, closet of house keys and, like, broke into mm-hmm. Betty's house. And it did come to a, like, meaningful moment between them.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's between those two. But
I think I would want to give it to Lynette.
Yeah.
I just like the way Lynette handled this. I think, like, sometimes we need a reminder of, like, the bond that she and Tom have. And I think that this was a nice example of that. And to show that Lynette doesn't totally just laugh at her husband all the time. Like, she does really care about him and does want him to be, like, happy and succeed. Because I think, like, last episode, they didn't set it up, but they could have totally gone in the direction where Lynette kind of sabotaged him at work.
Yeah,
but definitely. She was actually, like, yeah, but she was actually, like, really supportive. And, like, even when he did kind of complain that his ideas weren't going through, Lynette's like, well, just keep working on them. Like, that's part of the deal of us working together is I'm not just going to, like, help you all the time.
Yeah.
But she did in this way, and I liked that.
Yeah, so I really, I did, yeah, Housewife of the Week, Lynette. So, gotta give it to her. Mm-hmm. Now to our Apple rating.
All right.
Okay. So, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 3, 2, 1.
3.75.
Okay. We're getting closer. Yeah. Well, last time I went really like 4.25. This gives, I have to give it a 4. There was nothing I really hated. Like, even though Susan's storyline was stupid, I didn't hate it with a passion like I do when Dr. Ron is around right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the friendship theme was covered on every storyline. I like that we had a little bit of Mike action, Mike Daddy back in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did it for me. I like the Betty. It like the same feeling I had when Gabby and Carlos talked about having a baby. I had the similar feeling when Bree and Betty were speaking about their sons.
Mm-hmm.
So it evoked that emotion for me. And I thought there was some good laughs with Bree telling Danielle that she's stupid, with Gabby having like bad jokes about the Underground Railroad and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I liked the cold open. The cold open was amazing. So
yeah,
I think the marks for me
for sure. I think this episode had a lot of good stuff in it. I just feel like it suffered from the same fate of last episode, where it was just like, some of it was really, really strong, and some of it was a throwaway. I think, like, the way, now that I know for sure that they just put in the previously on stuff that wasn't even in the episode to set up Susan's storyline was really fucked up.
Makes me feel like, better, though, because I thought I was going crazy. I was like, did we ever talk about insurance?
Yeah, no. I think, like, that to me just shows how little direction they have with her this season. Like, they were just, like, trying to come up with something for her to do. I don't know. And, like, the way they kind of shoehorned Mike into her story. Like, I was happy to see Mike, but it definitely was, like, they just wanted an excuse to have him in the episode more. I don't know. Because it was, like, the reason they talked made no sense. And, like, I don't know. I guess I just was really kind of confused by that. But so I'm giving it lower marks for that, because it just felt like poor planning from a writing standpoint. But I did like Lynette's storyline. I thought it was, like, cute again. I thought Gabby and Carlos's was interesting. I think they're at least setting something up there. Bree's storyline was a good continuation of last week, I think, and it had that heartfelt moment. And I do, this episode felt a little more connected than the last one, like, the characters and, like, what they were doing. And not all of them, but just, like, by bringing Mike back in a little bit with the Noah storyline, like, kind of trying to reintroduce stuff they've just put on the back burner, I guess. But overall, it wasn't, like, a super big standout episode or anything.
Yeah, I feel like in the long run, I might find it forgettable. But we'll see. Mm-hmm. But, I'll give it a 4 for now. Just on that A-minus spectrum. Almost a B.
Okay.
So, yeah, or it is a B, I think. Yeah, it would be 80%.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's what it gets for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, next week we're watching episode 15, getting closer to some sort of resolution with a season finale. Mm-hmm. I think there's about 24 episodes, so we're almost there, chugging along.
Yeah. But it will be interesting to see, because, like, a lot of the characters don't have arcs going on. Like, they're going to kind of have to scramble, I guess, to set that shit up for the season finale.
I'm nervous, but I have hope. I have hope it's coming together. So, every Monday we drop. If we're running late, we usually try to tell you. You can follow us on Instagram. You can check us out on Twitter. We have an email and a website. If you are wanting more content from us, we usually post several times a week on different platforms. We're always welcome to feedback, whether through a rating and review or just through our DMs or whatever. Mm-hmm. If there's something you want more of or something you don't enjoy, let us know. We are always just evolving, growing and evolving, mm-hmm. and learning and doing yeah. the work. And yeah, other than that, you can catch us next Monday. So thanks for tuning in, but we're mm-hmm. going to leave you with our words of wisdom to know your neighbors.
Know your neighbors.